It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it is following a Cowboys 31-21 victory over the Washington Redskins. This juggernaut of an offense, it took it a while, but it finally got full throttle in five straight scoring possessions, just like the previous week versus the Giants. And it is the Doomsday Podcast, Matt Mosley here with you. And then, of course, Ed Werder checking in from Washington, D.C. He was out in Landover. He's making his way. He's made his way to the airport now, but he was right there. He's worked the locker room. In fact, we'll have some Jerry Jones that Ed was able to gather for us. And Ed, of course, doing his ESPN duties. I'm sure he was out at the stadium this morning very early, as only Ed can do. Ed, what has it? What's your day been like? And that place, did it? Was it as loud as it seemed on TV? It seemed like from watching it on TV, the Cowboys fans had a pretty good presence there.
Yeah, I would say they had a very strong showing. We were out there by 7:30 in the morning, and for reasons I can't explain, that this could only happen at the worst stadium in football, which I think FedEx Field is. The tarp was on the field with no moisture in the forecast. I don't know if they expect rain sometime in November, and they were getting ready for that. But the tarp was on the field to make our live shot look a little extra ugly. And so then the good thing was is I had a chance to be in the locker room after the game and watch the players come down the hallway. And, you know, the thing that stands out to me is something that Jay Gruden told me before the game when I talked to him. He said, you know, you think, hey, we're playing the Cowboys, we have to stop Zeke. And he said, that's true to an extent, but there are other things that they can do to hurt you. They can spread you out and launch it, and they can pack you in and run it down your throat. And I thought the Cowboys demonstrated their ability to do both of those things equally well during this game. And I think in doing so, they've kind of confirmed what we expected, which is in defeating the Giants and the Redskins, scoring 30 points against each, it's a two-team competition in the NFC East between the Cowboys and the Eagles.
I think you're right, and then also we'll mention this later, but also I wanted to say as we record this, a reminder that Drew Brees is out of that game. That was everybody was waiting to see that rematch between the Rams and New Orleans. Drew Brees out of that game in the first quarter with some sort of right wrist-type hand injury, and it doesn't look like he's going to come back in this game. So there's another really, really good team in the NFC that is now compromised and has Teddy Bridgewater running their team. So the Cowboys, you never want any kind of injury or anything like that, but the Cowboys looking more and more formidable in the NFC. Ed, so much to get to today. I'm going to ask Frito of Frito Nation Productions, our fearless producer and longtime DFW radio personality. I'm going to ask him to play the music now. All right, there it is, and it's time for the Doomsday Podcast as we continue to roll along. Ed Werder has been out there in Landover and was out there, made his way, of course, to that just hellhole of a stadium. If you do hear anything in the background, it is Ed. He's made his way to the airport, and there will be some announcements. Ed, you sound fine. I'm not worried about that. But
could these damn passengers quit leaving their stuff at security?
That's
then they
right.
Wouldn't have to use this PA system nearly as often. If people would just not be so forgetful of their possessions.
I'm anxious for you to have several more. I think after about 5 to 6 road trips, we'll get you back into that Admirals Club. And that is when Ed, boy, I love when you get in there and really flex your muscles and get involved. But for now, you're at the airport. It's fine. You're flying out of there. Which one are you flying out of? Is this Reagan?
We're flying out of the B terminal at Washington Reagan, the downtown airport.
Okay, you're at Reagan. Okay, good. Good. You can almost see from there some of the, like the Lincoln. I mean, you can see so much stuff there.
See, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see the Capitol building from here right now.
Ooh, it's pretty fun. It's pretty fun when you're in D.C.
Impressive.
Yeah, it is very impressive. And later we'll kind of get your thoughts on what you thought of the Democratic debate the other night. No, we're probably not going to do that. It is Ed Werder coming to us live from Washington, D.C. And he's had a very eventful few days. He flew out, was a part of the big Thursday night coverage. In fact, after that ball game, as Bruce Arians running off the field, just glad to get out of there with a win. And he goes right behind a Werder live shot. That was kind of fun. And then Werder goes straight out to, well, I don't exactly know what your travel schedule was, but you did make
The funny thing about that is I cover this just horrendous game by Cam Newton, which was surpassed only by his poor choice of clothing that night after the game. And if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. And I went out to the Star on Friday after I got back, and I passed Witten as he's coming in the locker room and we're being asked to leave. And he says to me, "Hey, I got to ask you a question about Carolina." I said, "What's that?" He said, "What's Dorf think of that guy?" You know what? He hasn't returned any of my recent calls since the game ended, so I couldn't exactly tell you, but I really don't think he would ever expect one of his quarterbacks to comport himself in the way that Cam Newton did after a game in which he failed to score a touchdown and lost a second consecutive home game.
Yeah, although you did give him some credit for taking a lot of the blame in that game. It was
He handled it much better than he did the Super Bowl loss, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, that was a really rough outing.
But ultimately, you'd like not to put yourself in that position by playing better on the field.
Yeah.
That's the real solution.
Hey, I had Witten, and we'll get on to the Cowboys game very quickly, but I just had a thought today. I'm listening, and you know, you're at the game, and so you're watching. You can see the Fox coverage. You can look up at your monitor as you're watching the actual game, and I know where you were at FedEx. I could tell you sent a press box tweet, so I knew exactly where you were sitting. But what you can't do, unless you've tapped into it somehow, you can't really listen to the Fox coverage. And I will say, Witten would have been so much better off. And you don't need to comment on this, because now that I think about it, this is one of your colleagues. But Burkhart is so good, and he is so Summerall-like. And Kevin Burkhart, who was doing this game, he's become the number two play-by-play man after Buck at Fox. But he's so good, and he's got a real chatty analyst. Charles Davis just chatting constantly, and Burkhart is really, really good. And it dawned on me, that's who Jason Witten needed. He needed someone who was very economical and all that. But again, you're ESPN, so I'm not going to put you in that weird spot. That's just my take on the situation.
Since you mentioned Witten in broadcasting, Witten did accept my interview request after the game to do a little one-on-one. And before we started, I said, "I'm not sure which one of us should hold the microphone." And then I said, "Hey, I appreciate you deciding to leave ESPN and creating a spot for me again. However, I did not get all of the salary you left behind."
Did he like that? Did he get a good
laugh? And, you know, it was a really good interview. He was really engaged. And how could you not be when I'm asking the questions? But in talking about Dak, I thought he was really interesting in that he said, you know, you talk about his playmaking ability. We're attacking on offense. But within that, you know, we're always taking what the defense gives. We're limiting the interceptions and negative plays, but he's creating at all times. Not just the big plays today, but all the little small runs he gets. You know, they just have to deal with him as a defense, he said. And then his ability to stand in the pocket and make throws, I just think he's striking the ball at a high level, and that's not easy to do. He said his ability to let it fly and throw these guys open, he's just playing at a high level. It's great to see. Humble guy, happy for all his success. He wants more, and that's what you want in your quarterback. So these guys have really bought completely in on Dak Prescott. And, you know, he had another phenomenal game today. What does he have now? I think they've scored 9 touchdowns in 2 games. 7 of them are passing touchdowns. Last week against the Giants, he had 4 touchdown passes to 4 different receivers. Today he had 3 touchdown passes to 3 different receivers. And so I think he's demonstrating remarkable ability to get everybody involved and take full advantage of all of the personnel that has been provided him on his side of the ball. Now, one more thing I want to say, Matt, as we discuss the game, we have to keep in mind, again, it was the Redskins.
Yeah.
It's week 2. They have a week 12 injury report. You know, I mean, they've been without their starting quarterback since last year, Alex Smith. They lost their middle linebacker in the offseason, Reuben Foster. Their left tackle hasn't reported in a contract slash dispute over who the medical staff should be. They lost their starting running back, their best defensive end, and a starting cornerback last week. Oh, and they have seven starters over the age of 30. So this franchise is going nowhere fast.
Yeah, I agree with you. And same thing for the Giants. They're not really headed anywhere, although it does look like we'll see Daniel Jones soon, the way that thing is headed. But 2-0 start, I mean, you can know it's the Giants and the Redskins and still be wowed by what Dak has done to this point. And I find that, I mean, that may be a conversation for another day, but real quick on this point, you and I both know probably better than just about anybody that Witten and Romo's relationship and how close they are. But we also know that, and at times it kind of puts Witten in an awkward situation because he's got this new quarterback and he doesn't want to say anything. But even with that interview, and I can't wait to see that and kind of and be able to watch that because I was like driving out here when all that was happening. But I think it's kind of funny because Witten, one of the reasons I think he wanted to come back, he wanted out of the booth. We both know that. But he also missed it, and I also think he loved this quarterback. I mean, I really, really think he loved, and that's a tricky thing because Tony is will always be one of his best friends. But at the same time, I think he weighs that against, well, this guy is every bit the leader Tony ever was. And again,
I thought one of the remarkable statements I've ever heard Jason Witten make, using everything you just said as context for what I'm about to say, which is when he went to training camp, he said, "I've never been around a leader like this." I mean, for him to make that comment, given everything you just said about his relationship and the respect he has for Tony Romo, I think that's a pretty remarkable statement. And I remember the very first time, right before Dak's first start against the Giants in 2016, after Romo got hurt against Seattle, if you remember, Dak took over a team that had been 0-11 the year before without Romo, in games Romo didn't play. And I go up to Witten, and I said, thinking that if ever anybody's going to say, "Hey, we're in trouble," it's going to be Witten because of his devotion to Romo. And instead, I said, "Hey, last year, you went 0-11 without Romo. What makes you think it's going to be any different this year?" And he says, "You know what? When Tony went down last year, we kind of panicked," he said. "And that's not going to happen this year. And the reason it's not going to happen this year is because of Dak Prescott and the way everybody believes in him. And it's all natural. He's just being who he is. It's genuine. And we're in with him." And they were so in with him that they won 11 straight games, right?
Yeah.
And Romo never got another chance. And that just shows you what a galvanizing player Dak Prescott is, beyond the remarkable playmaking skills we're seeing now on a more regular basis every Sunday.
Yeah, and in Tony's defense, I will just say that this is me. This is not you saying this, so you don't get blamed for this. But there's a tad bit of resentment that I sense that Jason has toward Tony for having so much broadcasting success. Okay, I'll quickly move on.
I just think, you know what, I think you got to put in context, and maybe today does it better than anything else, is do the Cowboys fans have any idea how fortunate they are that they ever found the solution at quarterback with Tony Romo as an undrafted player, one of the greatest careers ever for an undrafted quarterback or undrafted player at any position, and then to find a starting quarterback the caliber of Dak Prescott in the fourth round? I mean, the Redskins, I think the last Redskins quarterback to win a playoff game was Mark Brunell, okay? And since then, they've drafted three or four quarterbacks in the first round, and they still don't have a guy as good as Dak Prescott.
You are right, and let's give the late, great Wade Wilson a little credit for, think he was a huge Dak fan, and I want to also say that the Cowboys kind of liked Paxton Lynch and Connor Cook more than Dak. So,
sometimes the deals you don't make are the best deals.
That's right. Some other teams maybe did them a favor by not being able to move up and do some things that they tried to do. It is the Doomsday Podcast as we roll on. Ed Werder coming to us from Washington, D.C., where he is going to fly back now from a big-time road trip that has taken him kind of all over the country to cover all this football. He saw a bad game Thursday. I wouldn't call this a bad game. This was fun in the sense that, Redskins got on them early. I thought this was the first bit of adversity the Cowboys faced. I guess you could make the argument the Giants jumped up early, too. But, boy, that thing was over in a hurry. Cowboys' first three possessions didn't look that great. And then they just turned it on, 21-7 at halftime. And it really seemed like at that point it was over. And I just think they can come at you. The Cowboys can come at you from so many different directions. Let's start. There's some stuff I want to talk to you about the defense. There are a couple of concerns there. They're doing a lot of good things, but also a couple of things that would give you concern. But the offense, the only thing, and I'll, of course, talk to Stretch later. He'll give us grades on all this. But the only thing I would say, you know, Connor Williams got blown up one time. And you know, he's given up every once in a while. He'll get exposed a little bit, kind of up.
And he had a couple penalties, too.
Correct. He had a holding, and boy, there's a lot of holding penalties right now.
He had a legal procedure when they were in the red zone that cost him a touchdown. They had to resort to a field goal.
Yeah, yeah.
But go ahead, you're right. Yeah, they have some – they're not invincible, but
yeah.
I think Jay Gruden really made the point. And this is not a team anymore that just has to beat with Ezekiel Elliott. They can beat you with a passing game.
Yes. Yeah, I agree, and it doesn't matter which specific receiver it is. They can kind of go to anybody. And my gosh, by the way, as fun as it is to see Witten come back and great, he's getting these touchdowns. I mean, that Jarwin looks like a monster when he's headed down the sideline like he was today.
Well, and the other guy who's just kind of getting started is Devin Smith, right?
Yes,
he catches the 51-yard touchdown pass that kind of changes the Cowboys' offensive fortunes, because to that point, you know, they've been pinned on three of their first four possessions were at the 10 or worse, their own 10 or worse. And of course, you mentioned the adversity they had, the frustration. You know, Dak gets picked off after he avoids a sack, makes a poor throw, gets tipped, picked off for the first time this year. They're dealing with a turnover and a short field. They give up a touchdown off that. And so there's some adversity. But as you know, I think Jerry Jones said in the locker room afterward, one of the great things about the youth of this team and Dak in particular is his ability to play through failure and frustration and work his way out of it, confident each time that he gets the ball, that will eventually happen. And I just think we're seeing a young quarterback who's just beginning to show the league what he's capable of. And I guess this is a great example of the diversity he offers. You know, that 51-yard touchdown pass to Devin Smith, Dak's got 9 passing touchdowns of more than 50 yards. Only Tom Brady and Phillip Rivers have more since Prescott entered the league in 2016. And then that run he had, the great zone read run on the 3rd and 1, 42 yards. That's the second longest run ever by a Cowboys quarterback, being just 6 yards shorter than the record held by Danny White set in 1980. So these are the kind of rare things that you're seeing Dak Prescott do in just his fourth NFL season.
Yeah, it's remarkable. It was funny to watch. My family was in there with me, and my 12-year-old daughter, she's a big sports fan, and Meredith was in there, and they were getting a real kick out of it. They didn't think Dak looked real fast. And then I thought it was funny, after the game, some of his comments indicated that the I think Zeke said, well, he could have scored. He could have scored on that play.
Yeah, and if Michael Gallup would have made his block, he would have scored.
Although, I kept seeing, did you see all that space out to the right? It was really funny. Dak kind of just, he kind of waited for Gallup.
Ran at the defender.
Yes, he kind of went right at him. It was kind of funny to watch, but you're right. That is a threat. I mean, the guy's not, he's not Lamar Jackson. He doesn't have that kind of speed.
Yeah.
But
he's a better thrower.
Yes, he is, and he's peak. He's like, you know, he's not as big as Cam, but when Cam was really good in like 2015, version
like
of Cam.
Like when he was a league MVP and his team went to the Super Bowl, that
yes,
Cam? Yeah.
Yes. He's got a little more of that because Cam just was Cam was just a monster and could get out there and impose his will. And then RPOs, those look fun, man. Those look really good. And that one you're talking about, the 42-yard run, he just kept it, and everybody went with Zeke. Did you see that? I mean, everybody, like, oh, my gosh, we've got to follow Zeke. And he just,
actually, I think it was Tony Pollard.
Was it Pollard?
Pollard
okay.
Was in the game
yeah.
At that time. And that's another interesting thing I think we saw from an offensive strategy point of view, and really speaks to the depth, is that You know, they trusted Tony Pollard with that possession at the end of the third quarter, thinking that they could get a lead and then they could have Zeke fresh and pound the Redskins in the fourth quarter. And that's exactly what they did. They scored on the possession that Pollard was in the game. I think they kicked a field goal, gave him a 10-point lead. But then Zeke came in the fourth quarter and had like nine carries to kind of put the game out of reach for the Cowboys. So
yeah,
that was kind of a new tactic that we've seen them use in terms of having drafted Pollard and now feeling like Elliott is where he should be, having overcome now the missing all of training camp and the holdout of the preseason.
This is now the team that they're, I mean, I don't think this will happen all season. It may happen against the Dolphins where they're like, let's get this guy a touchdown. Like the, and they did that with, they're trying to do it with Pollard, and they got him in the end zone, and that call got pulled back. Was that Connor? Was it Connor over there?
I think it was Cooper. I think Cooper.
Cooper, you're right.
Had a hold or something on the play.
Yeah, yeah, they had a few of those calls today that might hurt you at a closer game, but they really.
But you're right. I mean, the number of guys scoring touchdowns and making big plays, I mean, it's sort of like the quarterback trusts them all. And, you know, Devin Smith, let's give him credit. You know, former second-round pick has blown out his, you know, the ACL in his knee twice and persevered through that. And the Cowboys get a guy who was, you know, obviously deemed a second-round talent at one point who made their squad as a fifth receiver, and he scores on a 51-yard touchdown catch today.
Yeah, and I mean, and he only was able to really get in the mix because of Tavon Austin being out with a concussion. And so now,
right.
I mean, it's going to be really hard to get Devin Smith out of there with the way he looked today.
Yeah,
go ahead.
There were a lot of people in the Cowboys locker room who were happy for Devin Smith to be rewarded through all of his for all of his perseverance and overcoming adversity in a very personal sort of way, that he was rewarded with that touchdown that for how hard he's worked.
Yeah, yeah. Only real poor. Well, he threw it behind Cobb, and you could make the argument there are some receivers that might have reached back there and caught that ball, but that would have been really tough. And
you know, I think
on the interception.
From my vantage point, I could, you know, kind of have a quarterback's point of view to a degree. It looked like he saw Gallup late. Gallup was open very early on, wide open down the left sideline, and first of all, I think Dak was late to find him, and then he threw a poor ball. If he throws it to the inside instead of the outside, it's a big gain at worst and a touchdown at best. So I think that was just a poor throw by Dak.
And then the one where was that Gallup that got open on a deep ball, and he just couldn't quite adjust to the ball. Dak put it out there, and it wasn't really on the money. I mean, my gosh, the guy had what, four incompletions on the day, 25 for 29. Yeah. Yeah, so he missed a couple of big throws. You got to keep the guy honest. But for the most part, how funny was it? I mean, maybe you remember this off the top of your head, but when they said he came close to the consecutive completions record, which is held by Brandon Whedon at 21 consecutive completions.
Well,
I was like, what?
About Brandon Whedon? I've never seen a guy who could spin it like that. So that's some fast company that Dak's keeping there.
It is.
Yeah, all the great Cowboys quarterbacks, two Hall of Famers, and some other really good players, and it's Brandon Whedon whose record you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, very, very, very funny. Now, before we get to the defense, Ed, I want you and I to discuss the defense. Let's say Ed had some time with Jerry, got involved in the big scrum that always happens after the game. It's not quite as huge on the road, so you can get in there a little closer with Jerry when you're on the on the road, and let's take a listen to some of the highlights from that conversation. Here is Jerry Jones after the game.
The thing that when you hear quarterbacks describe, it always is coupled with you need somebody that can come to practice after he's really had a bad game. You need somebody that can get in the huddle after he's had a bad play. It's always about mentally overcoming the human frailty, if you will, of getting disappointed and losing your confidence, or basically having a doubting moment. And I'm sure he has them. He just plays through them. I don't think there's any question that the team represented having doubting moments at times out there today and played through them. And I think that's really, in a way, his personality.
Is this the offense you expected when you hired Kellen Moore? Is this what you thought it would look like?
I thought that you would see, like at the beginning of this year, yes, I thought we would see more play action. I did. I think certainly he's spent a lot of time. He works the pocket, but the way we're structured, play action is fits him real well. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that we're seeing a lot of play action. Doesn't surprise me at all that we're mixing it up before for the defense out there. I think Kevin's got great communication skills. He really can communicate with these players. They can try and attempt and execute some things that are just that. They mix it up out there. He's got a lot of confidence in getting over it if they fail.
How ideally is
I think we're seeing what young people can bring to the table. Young people are supposed to make mistakes, and young people are supposed to have a more thought about the future and not get deterred. And we got a young coaching staff, and I'm glad to see us taking advantage of that aspect.
How appealing is this style of offense to you?
What?
How appealing is this style of offense to you?
Well, I think the fact that we're physical, yet at the same time, philosophically, have not realized, but realized we've got to get them back off of the line of scrimmage. That's very appealing, but not quite as appealing as our ability to get them off the line, back off the line of scrimmage. Now that's exciting. Easier said than done, but I'm really pleased. I said earlier, I was glad to see that 15 make that his one of his real skills is he can really catch and adjust on a deep ball. That's been his MO since he came out of Ohio State. That's how he played, how he made plays at Ohio State. You saw a classic out there today. That it really adds to dimension for Dak and our offense.
Are you showcasing Taco Fortrey?
Huh?
Are y'all preserving Taco Fortrey?
We're not getting into that at all in any way. I know there's discussion, but we don't get into that. We get, of course, I'm excited, really excited about getting Robert Quinn back. That's a big thing for us, and he really has gotten that behind him. It's unfortunate for him because he's a heck of a young man, and that probably was a little ironic that happened to him. He's got such high character quality. Robert Quinn does high character quality. And so I'm glad that he's going to be back out here. We need him.
Jerry, is there any update on the Dak contract?
What?
Is there any update?
No.
All right, there he was. And Ed, from your post-game activities and kind of listening in on a lot of things and then getting in there and doing all your ESPN work, what stood out to you? Anything really grab your attention after the game? Was there any coach that mention anything to you? A lot of guys will kind of say things to you sometimes in passing as they're headed over to the bus. Anything really stand out to you from the post-game conversations? I know you had a lot of pre-game conversations since you were out there so early. You've already alluded to those. Anything post-game that stood out to you?
I would just say that, just talking to some of the coaches, the offensive coaches about, they really feel like we talked to John Kitna right at training camp, and he was really good about some of the things that he and Dak have been working on. Some of the things he mentioned were, completion is not good enough. It's all about being accurate and putting the ball exactly where it needs to be and creating opportunities for your receivers to run after the catch. And I think we continue to see evolution in that. But one of the things that somebody pointed out to me was that the touchdown pass to Devin Smith was a great play action fake. And play action passing is something that the Cowboys really should be excellent at, given that they have the best running back arguably in the league since Zeke's won 2 rushing titles in 3 years. But it's something that the coaches until now really didn't didn't like Dak to turn his back to the defense and fake the handoff and then try to relocate everybody when he looks up. They liked him to take his drop or be in the shotgun so that he could fix his gaze on the field and the defense and not lose track of people, whereas the play-action pass causes him to take his eyes off the defense. Well, now he's capable in his fourth year of doing that, and that's a huge thing. I mean, I think last week against the Giants, he had his best play-action passing day ever, completed like 13 of 15 play-action passing plays, and then, of course, the big one today. So I think that's something to look forward to going forward, but there's just a real strong sense from the coaching staff that they've got the right people coaching their quarterback, and their quarterback is being used in all the right ways. John Kitna told me, look, this guy's always been good, but Kellen Moore has unleashed him on the league.
That is really interesting, because we had that comment. You and I both thought that Kitna had been such a large presence. He's he's got a really good aura about him, and that it was kind of funny when you saw Kellen next to Kitna. Sometimes Kitna almost had more of an authoritative type presence, and yet here he is deferring to Kellen. And I'll be honest, there were some people on this coaching staff, won't name any names, but that when they made Kellen the OC, were just kind of like in the dark about it, like, oh, okay, all right, didn't really know this was going to happen, but okay. And he certainly seems to be getting the job done. Some of the numbers, Ed, I was looking at, 51 of 62 passing now in these two games, 674 yards, 7 TDs, 1 interception, 142.8 passer rating. So, Ed, we got to watch that. The passer rating came down this week, so he's going to have to stay on top of that. 9 rushes for 81 yards.
And I think the last Cowboys quarterback to start a season with 2 games and having 7 touchdown passes was Don Meredith in like 1966. So I think that was before Brandon Wheaton, if I remember correctly. But it's pretty remarkable the milestones that Dak, you know, seems to be achieving on a regular basis now.
Yeah, it's very remarkable to see. Now, I wanted to get over on the defense for a minute and visit a little bit about that. For the most part, obviously, early there were some issues. They let them go right down there and score after the turnover. But for the most part, they hung in there. It did fine. I thought Van Der Esch made some really good plays. Lawrence was whistled for that's a rough one when you go low, but they're going to call that. Yeah. They're going to call this in this game.
Roughing the passer.
They did get a roughing the passer on him. He applied some pressure. You had the injury update. Looks like Antoine Woods is going to be okay. MCL, so he won't be out too long. It could have been worse. They were a little worried about that.
Walking to the locker room after the game, and he didn't seem to be, you know, walking with a terrible limp, and he's still in his uniform the second half, so I'm guessing they don't think it's a real significant injury.
Yeah, and everybody did a pretty good job. I mean, it would be nice at some point with Byron Jones got his hands on a couple of balls in this, and he had some really good coverage, especially early in the game, and it'd be nice if they caught one of those. I mean, they've had some opportunities. This is
the
not a big...
turnovers continue to elude them. Yep.
Yeah, it's not a big interception team, and at some point they are going to need some takeaways.
Imagine how many points they could score if they didn't have to drive 97 yards, 83 yards,
yes,
75 yards for their first 3 touchdowns.
Exactly.
Imagine if they got a cheap one now and then.
Yeah, and that just has not been the calling card. I mean, Heath continues to be just a big hitter. I think he does make some plays in the box. He was banged up in this game a little bit. I don't know if you heard, Ed, what was going on with him.
I think he pretty much just left to get an IV.
Oh, okay.
It was pretty warm out, so I think that's all it was. He may have missed a few plays on defense for that. But the thing that impressed me about the defense, and, you know, I think you're right, I don't think they've created as much pressure as we expected, and maybe the return next week of Robert Quinn will have that effect and give them a more legitimate pass rusher on, at least on third downs, to go with Tank. You know, they haven't had that since Randy Gregory's been gone with his suspension, but getting Quinn back could have an impact in that regard. I think the lack of turnovers or even really getting close, they're not even getting the ball on the ground, you know, kind of things, has got to be frustrating Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard. But I do think the one thing that did exceptionally well today was defend Chris Thompson out of the backfield, because he's a big play waiting to happen. He's as good a third down back as there is in football. And I know that, you know, the Redskins really wanted to just run Adrian Peterson, which is ironic because last week, obviously, Jay Gruden had to tell him that for the first time in his career, he's going to be inactive and wouldn't dress for a game. But then they lost Geis, their second-round running back, in the game. And so now Peterson this week becomes a starting running back. And Jay Gruden said, hey, when I called him in the office and told him, hey, be ready on Sunday, you might be inactive, I thought he was going to kill me. He said, but he handled it like a pro, and then everybody else on our team handled it, well, not like a pro. and then he said, look, he said, so now the plan is we want to give, you know, Adrian Peterson a lot of carries today, and if he succeeds like I think he will, you know, then these people will say I look stupider than ever for what I did in not dressing him week one, so I can't win. But the Cowboys did a great job, I thought, on Peterson in the run game in general, because he had 99 yards against him when the Redskins beat him here last year, which was their only division loss, was on this same FedEx field. And I think the most impressive thing was that they handled Thompson out of the backfield.
Yeah, he is a good third down back and can be pretty elusive out there. You're right, they kind of bottled him up a little bit. I thought it was interesting. This team is not satisfied on defense. I was looking at some of the quotes. Malik Collins, who did make one really nice play in the backfield for about a 4-yard loss early in the game to kind of set the tone, he was asked about only having the defense only having one sack. He said, terrible. That ain't our standards. And then DeMarcus Lawrence on the Cowboys pass rush today, it wasn't good enough. One sack is not our standard. We got to be in the quarterback's face every time he drops back. So, you know, I think that's a good attitude to have. It almost sounds like Alabama or somebody, or actually Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma now, even after these huge days, some of these college players are saying, nah, we didn't do it. We didn't live up to it. And the defense does not seem satisfied with what they're doing. They got a little soft late, but really the game was already, out of reach. And this was, pretty pleased with what you've seen there. My one thing would be, and I know one of those plays got called back, so it didn't mean anything, but he actually made some nice plays today. But Anthony Brown can miss some tackles. And we've already seen, you know, Heath take some bad angles. I would just say some tackling issues from the defense at times. You'd hate to see that. That may hurt them at some point, but for the most part, I think everybody stepped up and played pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to find fault with much of what they did. And I think the interesting thing now as we look forward, you know, my last vision as they were coming off the field and up the tunnel was Dak was walking toward the locker room with Jalen Smith, who was, you know, congratulating the quarterback on the win and his performance. And Dak twice says to him, on to the next one, which I thought kind of illustrated the kind of singular focus Dak has. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute, the next one's Miami. Miami's given up 59 points week one, 43 points today. That's 102 points in 2 weeks, an average of 51 points. No wonder Dak can't wait to get on to Miami.
That's the truth. It is on to Miami. And this team is a very sad sack, and you've had to contribute to some of these reports this week, Ed, that they are they going to trade all the Minka? Like, are the Cowboys interested in some of their players? And obviously, you don't want to give up first-round picks for some of these guys that they're trying to move, but what a weird, weird situation that Miami is in. We've seen this in the NFL. I did think it was funny. Did you see the former Baylor receiver who's a great player for them, Xavion Howard? Something about
the corner, right?
Yeah, he's the corner, and he said something about, we just have to, I don't want to go anywhere. And a part of it, Xavion got a real nice big contract extension, so he's not dying to get out of there. But he said, we've got to trust the process, which was the old Sixers thing when they were tanking on purpose. Trust the process. And
yeah, well, the great thing for these guys is I don't know that they have to do it on purpose. They just show up and play as hard as they can and just get rolled every week anyway.
That's right. So the Cowboys have to try to stay focused and make sure they put this team away.
And we should acknowledge a couple things. One is the possibility of a Minka Fitzpatrick trade, which the Dolphins, amazingly, it's counterintuitive to me that when you're a bad team and you have good players, you want to get rid of the good players so you can draft guys who might be good players.
Yeah.
Like, I think the whole point is collecting good players and keeping them and making them use them in productive ways. And so why they want to get rid of the 11th pick in the draft, who is such a versatile player and is coveted by a lot of teams, is sort of idiotic to me. But okay, they can do what they want. And the Cowboys are interested to a degree. I can't imagine the Cowboys are going to give up a first round pick. And from everything I've heard to this point, there is a lot of interest in the player, and the Dolphins, according to Chris Mortensen, are holding very firm on their demand for a first-round pick. And I think today's game might have been, you know, kind of a farewell to Taco Charlton. And if so, they sent him off very nicely. But I saw him go in the locker room with his Cowboys gear on, and I wondered to myself, is that the last time he's going to wear Cowboys gear? I think there's a very real possibility of that, given that he's been inactive both of the first two games when they needed a defensive end. And now they have one coming back that's clearly ahead of him on the depth chart. And so I think this week I would not be surprised to see Taco Charlton either released or traded.
And by the way, is he obviously we saw some good things from him in the preseason. Is this just one of those deals, Ed, from the people you've talked to, that they just say, well, we whiffed on this one? Like, he's not what we had hoped he would become? Like, he's just not the, you know, the pass rusher? Is it the attitude?
Yeah.
What is the biggest thing that's holding him back?
Obviously, he's not a guy who's bought in. He's not a guy that they think works exceptionally hard. And I think those are two fundamental assets that players have to have if they're going to succeed under Rod Marinelli. And there aren't very many guys. I think Marinelli is viewed as a guy who gets a lot out of ordinary players. And so if he can't make Taco Charlton a player, then who really thinks they can? I don't think there were a lot of teams that had Taco as a first-round pick, a late first-round pick, but a first-round pick, that's where he went. And then that becomes the expectation. And he's really never approached it. And I know a lot of teams were down on him because they didn't see him as a very explosive rusher. I think if we went back to our podcast we did after that draft, that would be the thing that stood out of the criticism of the pick, was this is not a guy who's an explosive pass rusher. And if they really hit on him, maybe he's Jim Jeffcoat. But obviously he's not even that. And he's not even, he's not Tony Tolbert. He's not Jim Jeffcoat. And so in all likelihood, his career is very near its end here in Dallas.
All right, quickly before we let you catch this flight, what was that like getting to see your team that you've loved for many years, the Atlanta Braves? I saw the tweet about it. You appeared to have really good tickets, and you ended up about three rows behind the dugout there on the, what was that, third base line or first base line? I couldn't.
Yeah, third base line.
Third base
right
line.
By the third base dugout where the Braves were. Yeah, it was great. There were a lot of Brave fans there. And it was a beautiful day because it was kind of cool and breezy and overcast, so the sun wasn't beating on you. And the Braves managed to get into the Washington Nationals bullpen and took them apart and won the game 10-1. The unfortunate thing was obviously Charlie Culberson squared around a bunt and took a 91-mile-an-hour fastball right in the face below his eye. So obviously hoping that injury is not as serious as it seemed at the time and that he's able to make a full recovery. But I almost got to see Ronald Acuna, our 23-year-old phenom, hit his 40th home run. But he hit it to the deepest part of the park and used every inch of it. And it was just a long flyout, but he did help break the game open later with a double down the line.
All right, Ed, that was, man, fun. You sound like you had a good trip. Glad to get you back. And continued blessings on Jill as she continues to make progress in her recovery. And we've all charted that and been able to kind of follow that on social media with you. And she's been remarkable and shown such great resilience going through what she's gone through. So really appreciate everything you keeping us up to date on that. And safe travels, sir. We'll have Glenn Stretch Smith coming up next. Anything you want me to bounce off of a Stretch?
I think you're capable of giving him a full dose of inquiries.
Okay. All right.
Nothing strikes me at the moment, but hopefully he'll limit his use of profanities in a moment like this. I wonder if he views them as a legitimate contender, if you can identify such a team this early in the season.
Interesting. Okay, we'll hit him up on that, and we appreciate it. Safe travels, Ed. Thank you very much.
All right, see you soon, my friends.
There he goes, Ed Warder. Now will fly back to us, and he'll be in position to cover Cowboys versus Dolphins next year. Wanted to say before we get to the great Glenn Stretch Smith, and he gives his grades. Thank you to our fine sponsors. First of all, I want to say, boy, the Hodges brothers, Craig Hodges, just an amazing friend, and he does an unbelievable job. And it is Hodges Capital, and what they do is they've been doing it for a lot of years. And I feel like, boy, if you're in this Dallas area or if you're really anywhere, you'll see Craig from time to time on CNBC. And Clark is his brother. Both went to Baylor, where I went, and they just do an incredible job. And Hodges Capital has become one of the most recognized funds really in the country. And what they do is put people in these mutual funds, and they put together the exact right funds for you, and they tailor it to your needs. And anybody from just extremely high wealth to folks that are just looking to really pad their retirement a little bit and to be taken care of as they kind of move into their glory years, the Hodges do that for you, and we appreciate them so much for doing that. Also, MyBookie. MyBookie has better bonuses and more prop bets than any other sports book, period. This year, they're hosting the first online handicapping super contest. First place guaranteed to win at least $100,000. Only costs $100 to enter. All you got to do is pick five NFL games against the spread every week to climb the leaderboard and score your share of the huge cash prize pool. That's why MyBookie is always the right play. You bet. You win, they pay up to $1,000 first deposit bonus. Double your first deposit. Use the promo code DOOMSDAY, DOOMSDAY, to activate the offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie, MyBookie. And don't forget to use the promo code DOOMSDAY when creating your account to claim the bonus. Bet, win, get paid with MyBookie. All right, Doomsday Podcast. Thanks to all our sponsors. Man, so fun to have all these sponsors lining up to partner with the Doomsday Podcast. And Ed Werder catching a flight out of D.C. So just me. You're not going to face the wrath of Ed Werder, but Glenn Stretch Smith, you know him, you love him, former Cowboys coach and scout, giving his grades out. And Stretch, let's start with the quarterback. I mean, our old buddy Galloway used to say it's all about the quarterback. Well, 25 for 29, 18 consecutive completions. This guy's playing at an extremely high level. He finally made a mistake, did throw the ball behind Cobb, and got picked off earlier today. But, man, after that, he kind of was able to bounce back, get it rolling.
Well, and that's what you got to love about him. I mean, that didn't bother him a bit. I mean, he really kind of kicked him into the next level. I mean, he's got a great grasp of this offense. He understands. You're starting to see how he's seeing coverages. He's understanding where guys are supposed to be. And I mean, I think the guy, he is everything that he's doing right now is about timing. Whether it's his contract getting renegotiated or how he, you know, takes his football team right down the field and scores. Everything he's doing is right. Now, the one thing I will say is that you can tell that Kittner's done a lot of work with him, and as far as his footwork, his placement with his feet, his deep ball, I think is really good right now. So, I mean, every single box that you check, I mean, it's good. And right now, everything that he's doing is at the right level. You know what? I'd say, hey, just let's hold off and sign him after the season. Just let the momentum keep rolling right now, because there's no question. I mean, you can't give that kid anything but an A in the grasp that he's got of the offense, the understanding he's got of the offense, where he's putting the football, how he's working his feet. I mean, it's straight across the board. You got to give the guy an A.
Yeah, it certainly appears that way. What was his throwing wise? Was there any? Is there any one throw? I mean, the RPO where he kept the ball, ran for 42 yards. Kind of funny at the end of it, he got a little tired or something, and he was just kind of sitting there trying to let Gallup block for him. But I mean, obviously, he can hurt you with his legs to a certain extent, but he can also throw people open right now, which is something we hadn't seen a lot in the past. The throw to Smith. Smith has already beaten his man. I mean, how you watch some of these matchups. Now you'll look at the film and have a little bit better idea. But Josh Norman, on the TV broadcast, they said, well, he was expecting safety help over the top. Now that may have been the case, but he still got beat. I mean, he still at some point you realize, okay, it's just me. I don't have any help. I got to cover this guy, and they just ran right past him. What did you make of that play? The deep ball to Devin Smith.
Yeah. They ran the inside receiver ran a corner, and what happened was the middle of field safety, he sees that guy flash in the corner. Well, he chases the corner, then the post comes right behind it. Well, I mean, Norman's playing outside leverage, and I do think that, you know, he thought he had some middle of the field help there, because otherwise you wouldn't open your shoulder and play that heavy outside. So, I don't know what the call was. It looked as if they were trying to, you know, play some sort of cover three, and he should have had help in the middle of the field. But, I mean, again, a well-designed play, and I think that's what I'm talking about. We think that, well, is Dak throwing guys open? He is throwing guys open, but the reason he's throwing guys open is because he understands coverages better, he understands route concepts better, he knows where his guys are going, and when you combine all of that, then, I mean, you know, it's a well-timed, well-oiled machine right now. And that's, I mean, you know, the Cowboys are moving the football up and down the field with the things that they're able to do from a matchup scheme. And then, you know, with the quarterback who's, I mean, quite frankly, guys, he's got a great grasp of this offense. And, you know, you got to take your hat off to John Kitna and Moore and, you know, quite frankly, Jason, for what he's done to put these guys in position to give them an opportunity to go get it done.
All right, let's look at the offensive line. There were a couple things that were called back. Some big plays were negated. Connor Williams got called for holding, I believe, one time, and then he got blown up that one time. I think 94 came right up the middle on him, and that created that sack that Kerrigan got back there. But for the most part, it seemed like the offensive line certainly did its job.
No doubt about it. I mean, you know, you're going to give up. I mean, there are times, let's face it, I mean, you know, the other guys, they're on scholarship and they get paid too. So, you know what, when a guy bull rushes you, it is very hard to stop. And you saw him get bull rushed, and then Kerrigan was able to come over the top. And, yeah, he got a little lazy with his feet, and he grabbed hold of the guy. They called him for holding, brought the touchdown back. But overall, when you look at how this offensive line continues to play, and I'm gonna point right to the center, who in my mind has gotten a veteran guy who's come back from the issues that he had, gets better from week one to week two. To me, that's what you want to see. And this offensive line, you know, whether we've talked about it a million times, but they are, you know, they are the stir that is in this drink right now. And it, you know, everybody thinks, well, you know, we want to talk about Dak. And, yes, Dak's doing a great job, but he's doing a great job because he's getting great protection up front, and they are knocking some people off the football. I mean, down there on the goal line, that when you can impose your will in short yardage and goal line situations, that's what you want to see. And I think, you know, they're coached by a guy who's got Columbo, who's got kind of that tough man mentality. And obviously that room is starting to take on that, you know, they're starting to take on that feel. So I got to give that group a really solid B+, and it would have been an A had they not, you know, had the touchdown been not called back. But, you know, you're going to get some penalties in those situations, and does that really bother me? Not really. It bothers me more that I think that, you know, Connor Williams has got to get better down in there, and he will. I mean, this is a guy, again, who is a little thin in the hips, and he's starting to get some thickness and understand how to anchor down in there. And I'm obviously he's got unbelievable help with the center and a role model with the right guard and Zach Martin. So this offensive line is for real, and you know, minus the fact that they got the touchdown brought back, it should have been an A grade. I'm going to go with a B+ with them.
B-plus with the offensive line. Wide receivers and tight ends. That group, Jarwin made a play. Obviously, Witten had a couple of plays in the game. Receivers, they really sprinted around. Devin, Gallup, the whole gang, Amari, they were all involved. What'd you make of that whole group?
Well, I think Cobb is the guy for me right now. He's the move guy. I mean, they ran some reverses to him. He's a tough guy. I mean, he returns punts, smart, understands, you know, really has a great grasp of the offense. And to me, he's the guy. We're not even talking about Cole Beasley. I talked to all kinds of Cowboys fans and listen. I mean, nobody, not one single person is missing Cole Beasley, where Cole Beasley used to be, you know, Cole Beasley, he's a Dallas kid. He went to SMU. Nobody missing him because of Randall Cobb. And yes, this group is continuing to get better. And you can tell there's a real chemistry between the quarterback and this receiving group. Obviously, Jason Witten can still do some things. I mean, he was able to move. They run that little tight end counter look with him. And it was able to open some nice holes for Zeke. But I see this group continuing to get better. Everything that they do, in my mind, is plus plus. And I mean, you know, all I can do is give those guys an A. And I think, you know, I mean, I'm as hard as anybody when you're looking at it to try to really kind of knock guys down and, you know, give guys mental errors and be honest about what you put out there. But right now, this group playing really well. They are flying around, and I love the ability to get deep and to take those deep shots, because you got to be able to hit those home runs. And right now, in 2 weeks in the season, I mean, the Cowboys are hitting home runs. They're making plays underneath. They got guys moving in motion. They're able to run some reverses. I mean, you're really not able to dial in on anything if you're a defensive coordinator with what the Cowboys are doing,
yeah,
because of the depth and the things they can do at receiver.
All right, running backs, Pollard and Zeke getting it done today. And Pollard spelled him a little bit. I was going to get in the end zone, but a holding call brought that back. But I thought both backs looked good. And Zeke, 111 yards and late, seals that thing and then does that thing you love. Feed me. Feed me, baby.
Yeah, he wants football. And you know what? You can tell he's a little concerned me a little bit. He wasn't in there on that first third and one situation when they threw the ball and had the interception. But you know what? He's going to play himself into that shape. You can tell that that's happening. And I mean, I Pollard's a good player, and you know, they've upgraded themselves from Rod Smith, who was there last year. So upgrade, and can't give that group anything or be the one of those guys anything but an A.
All right, let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball, and let's start with the one area of the team that you've been a little critical of. Well, everybody else is throwing the parade for this team, and we're kind of ready to get our tickets and get out there to Miami for the Super Bowl. You've been a little critical of that secondary. They had some good plays today, but they also had their moments. Saw a couple of Anthony Brown will miss a tackle on you from time to time. He'll also blow up a play, which is good from sometimes. What'd you make of that secondary today?
Well, yeah, and that's right. I mean, you know, he'll make a play, and then, like you said, he missed the open field tackle. Didn't take a great angle. I mean, Xavier Woods, I mean, he's tough. Read and recognize. I mean, Jeff Heath, you know, if he wasn't just a half a step slow, I mean, you can see he does some really good things. I mean, I like how he gets guys lined up. I think the concerning thing for me, again, is we had the dropped interception, and then Byron Jones, he's got great feet. He can run. I mean, he covers well. But I've never seen anything like a guy that cannot get his hand on a football. I mean, to hell with catching it. Would you please touch the damn thing? And I mean, they run the inside dig, the deep dig, and I mean, he puts his back foot in the ground and he breaks on the ball and he's right there. He undercuts it. Will not touch the football. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. And because of that, I mean, that concerns me. You got to have, in these tight road games and these games that you're going to see when it gets later in the season, you got to be able to make those plays in the secondary. You got to be able to get your hands on some footballs and make some interceptions. And that, I mean, that is concerning to me because, quite frankly, I don't see enough of that happening. And we talked about it last year. and I'm back on it this year. I mean, these guys do not play the football worth the tinker's butt, and it's bothersome. And I said, but Werder's not even on this thing, and I'm not wanting to swear, so you know what, make sure he knows that. But I at best got to give this group a B, because they did make some plays. But damn, there were some plays to be made where you could have knocked the Redskins out early in this game, and they didn't do it. And because of that, I got to give them a B.
All right, and the good news, by the way, I hope you saw the news. Rod is now letting Chris Richard take all questions each week, so let's get excited about that. It says he's going to get him some more opportunities out there. So good for Rod for stepping aside and letting Richard get some interviews. I mean, that's really what's going to get Richard a head coaching job, is some one-on-ones with Todd Archer. It is the Doomsday Podcast. I'm talking to Glenn Stretch Smith now, and linebackers. I didn't see a ton. I thought Vander Esch made a couple of plays, got back there, made some good hits. 54, he covers you. He will cover you out in the open field. It's nice to have a linebacker that can run. Anything stand out about the linebacking core?
Not really. They just kind of did their job. I mean, Vander Esch does flash all the time. It used to be we used to talk Sean Lee, and now it's, now it's Vander Esch. Jalen Smith's a good sound player. Not a lot here to either say, well, that really gets me excited. And then, they do what they're supposed to do. They're where they're supposed to be. And because of that, I mean, you got to give that group a B. Productive players that are that are where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there.
All right. And defensive line, Dorrance Armstrong was out there today. Obviously, you had Crawford got hurt, got a little banged up. His hip was hurting him. Had to leave the game. Antoine Woods is a little banged up right now. Looks like he'll have an MCL type thing. It should be okay. Should be back in a couple of weeks. But what did that D-line do for you? And how did Lawrence look? A guy who put a little pressure on the quarterback, but he seems to not be pleased that he's not getting those sacks.
Well, and a lot of times, he's kind of the guy that's coming off of that edge, and everybody's aware of his sack ability, his ability to turn that corner and play with that leverage. And I mean, he's a good football player. You talked about Crawford. Crawford had the sack, but quite frankly, I really thought we'd get more pressure out of these four up front. I really thought that you'd get some more production out of them. That concerns me a little bit. I'm not sure. And I'll ask you, Matt, is Quinn due back? Is he due back this week?
Correct.
He's
going to come back against the Dolphins. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And that's that's what they're going to need, is that other speed guy to come blowing up the field. And when you do that, you'll get guys that'll turn the protection a little bit, either one way or the other, and I think that'll free some of those guys up. But right now, I mean, this group's kind of taking they're kind of taking that lunchbox mentality of, hey, they do keep coming off the football. They did a nice job of playing the run. They'll stunt and stem around, get where they're supposed to be. Nothing really, nothing really flashy, nothing to really get you excited. But, they do play sound football. Marinelli gets them coached up. And, I think they do a real nice job of playing the run. But concerns me a little bit that they're not getting more pressure on the quarterback, because that's what's going to have to happen. You've got to get some sacks, and you've got to get some hands on the football in the secondary. But across the board for me, I'm giving the defense a B, the line a B, linebackers a B, secondary a B, but they've got to start making some plays on the football. Special teams wise, they just keep lining up and doing what they're supposed to do until we see something bad there. I'm not really sure that we can spend much time talking to what's going on with the special teams.
Well, listen, I appreciate it. I want to see a little bit of Tristan. I would like to get Tristan Hill involved, and at some point, Joe Jackson. Big Joe likes to get in there and be a part of things. And I want to see some Joe, and I want to see some Tristan, because I've seen enough of some of these guys, and they're just kind of standing up there. I don't know what they're up to, but I want to get some of these other guys involved. Stretch, good work, and we'll look forward to watching you on WFAA Channel 8 with Del Hansen. Del Hansen every Sunday night.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good evening. Thanks.
There he goes. I thought that was a little abrupt. Frito, he just kind of just felt like he was ready to move on with his life, and that's okay. He's got a lot of TV responsibilities. Maybe that has something to do. Have I sent him cash this week? We'll see. No, I'll get him taken care of. It is Glenn Stretch Smith with his stretch plays and giving his grades out. Been a big-time deal today. Thanks to our sponsors, Hodges Capital. Also, My Bookie. Thanks to Frito Nation Productions, one of the top producers of podcasters in the industry, especially in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Everybody up here, McKinney, Plano, Allen, all of these areas. He's very plugged in to all the Chamber of Commerces and all those kinds of things. We're doing good work up here. And I think we have covered just about everything. Dolphins coming to town next weekend. We'll be all over that one. Thanks for everybody who has been a part of this Doomsday podcast. We will see you next week. Thanks and good night, everybody. Stockings have been hung.